Hello, everyone, and welcome to our Valentine's Day weekend event. Kimberly's here with us, as well as our special guests, Aaron Elizabeth and Joseph Mercola. They are two of our major heroes in the health field, and we have been really eager to just immerse with them in this poignant and really critical topic, and to invite you all into it. As we've said many times before, Thrive Together is not a bunch of speeches, it's a think tank. And we really are excited to offer you their perspective on this topic, and then to get your input as well. So we will bring them on after taking care of a few preliminaries. First of all, I just want to really wish everyone a happy Valentine's Day. This is an unusual topic to be combined with a Valentine's weekend celebration. And at the same time, I think it's actually a perfect one. Because in wishing you happy Valentine's weekend, it's not just if you're coupled. It's to celebrate your lovability and your capacity for love. And that's there in every single human being. And the topic that we're focused on today, why are holistic doctors being killed, what it means and what we can do about it, is both a very poignant area to delve into. And we're actually really privileged to have some of the members of some of the families who've been directly affected by this joining us today, and one or two of them will probably come on a little later to share some of their perspective. We're really well aware of how poignant this topic is. And Kimberly and I have had, friends and family members really affected by this as well. And that's why it's such a critical topic, because these are people who have brought their genius to a particular critical area, made breakthroughs, and then risked their lives to bring the information out to the rest of us. So this topic today is to really honor them and to use the brain power that's on this call from all over the world today, not only to get informed, but to talk about what are the implications of these tragic occurrences, and even more importantly, based on that, what can we do about it? So I think it's actually a really powerful expression for us to have that are clear enough that it frees up a lot of time and boosts our capacity to work on key issues like this. And we're going to talk about that in depth a little later on. Before we do that, I'd like to turn it over to Goa to just bring you all up to speed on a few key logistical announcements. And then after that, I'll ask him to bring up an overview of the agenda of what we're going to cover today. So thank you all for joining us on this Saturday afternoon. And Goa, if you'd come on and clear up a few things, that would be great.
Great. Thanks, Foster. Welcome, everyone. First, a quick reminder, this event is being recorded. We make these recordings available as archives for others. Next, a quick overview of how we use the WebEx system for our events so we don't get bogged down when we're in the flow. Please use the chat for comments and to share resources with other people. Use the Q&A panel for questions to the panelists, and please limit each entry to one question. If you have any tech issues today, please email Mitch at events@thrivemovement.com. And again, when you get your issue resolved, please let him know. That helps him out a lot. If you intend to participate using video today, please submit your question into the Q&A panel. And when we call you up to ask your question, I will make you a panelist and enable your camera. After you exit full screen mode, look for your name in the participants panel and then click on the green camera icon next to your name. At that point, I will unmute you and you can ask your question. Please be sure your camera is up and running in advance, but there's no obligation to use your camera. If you want to be just audio only, that's fine. Reminder to please be succinct. Limit your questions to 1 minute and 2 minutes for comments. We really want to involve as many people as possible effectively today, so please keep it succinct. Unfortunately, those on mobile devices today will not be able to participate in the polls. And a final reminder, for those of you who may be new to the Thrive Together community, you can access all of the archives in the Thrive Together portal on the right-hand side on the website. I'll drop the link into chat now. Foster, back to you.
Okay, thanks, Goa. So I'd like Goa to bring up an overview of the agenda so you get a sense of what we want to cover today. As always, we're open to going off in different directions, you know, as the conversation dictates. But in order to use your time best and use our guest time the best, here's what we have in mind for today. We're going to ask particularly Aaron, who's been researching this killing of holistic practitioners, to give us a brief overview and update. I know a lot of you have read the blog that I wrote on this and probably a lot of the articles that she's written on it as well, both of which we've posted on our website and on our Facebook page. But she's going to give us an update, overview of that situation. Then we're going to take that and zoom out a little and look at how those occurrences align with a similar pattern of assassinations in other sectors. A lot of people think this is an isolated string of occurrences, and unfortunately it's not. But in recognizing how this pattern is prevalent in every sector, it informs us to take positive steps in eliminating this and solving a lot of these issues. Then we're going to look at what are the implications of this kind of pattern of assassination. And finally, we're going to move into, well, given all of that, what is it that each of us can do to actually be effective in ending these tragedies and getting these fantastic breakthroughs safely and successfully out to humanity? Then we want to open up the discussion for your insights, for your questions of Aaron and Joe and of us if you have them. We'll open that up for a while, and then we'll go back into a special discussion. It's rare that we get to do this, but when Kimberly and I have been on the road, people are very often interested in what's it like working on these type of issues as a couple. You know, what are the benefits? What are the challenges? And I particularly love that it's worked out that on Valentine's weekend, we get to do this with another co-creative couple who are obviously taking on very challenging issues in treacherous times, but also doing a very effective job of helping people out. So then we'll come back and we'll talk. Each couple will talk about that a little bit, our reflections, and then open it up to any insights that you have from your own experience or any questions that you have of us. At the end, we'll give you a preview of our next month's event. And so that's our general agenda. So before opening it up to our guests, we'd like to take a couple of polls, as we've done in the past, just to help us understand what's the level of awareness, what are the opinions on some relevant questions of the people who are on the call today. So one of our Thrive team members, Rob, is working behind the scenes today. And Rob, if you can bring up the first poll. The first poll is, which, if any, of the following do you think use assassination as a real tactic? Do you think that governments do this? Do you think intelligence agencies, the military, banks, corporations? You can check as many of these as are true for you. Secret societies. You may think none of them would or do, then you can check none of the above. So please go ahead and check those now, any ones that pertain, and then hit submit down in the lower right-hand corner, and we'll get a readout as to what you're thinking. Again, the polls will be a little skewed by the fact that the people on mobile devices, unfortunately, WebEx can't handle that input yet. So we won't get everyone's input, but we'll get a representative poll. Okay, so with this question, which of the following do you think actually use these tactics? 57% think all of the above, and the rest between 12 and 17% for all of the, and now 31% were unable to answer. So that would boost all of those numbers. But the majority of people on the call think that all of these would potentially use those as a tactic. Okay, thank you. Let's go on to the second poll, Rob. And the second poll is, what do you think the motive or motives would be for whatever individuals or groups to assassinate people? Would it be to suppress information? Would it be to eliminate or to send an intimidating message to other potential whistleblowers, innovators, or leaders? Thirdly, do you think it's potentially to protect profits? And D, once again, all of the above. Or if you have another one, you can also click other. And in our discussion, hopefully we can get you to either put in chat or come on and talk about what you think other motives might be. So check any one of those that you think is relevant. Hit submit in the lower right, and we'll bring up those results. Okay, 21% can't answer because they're on mobile devices. 77% think that it's all of those motivations, and no one has any others. Okay, so that's quite a clear poll. Thank you for participating in that. So now I wanted to just take a moment with great pleasure to introduce these wonderful folks to you. First of all, starting with Erin Elizabeth, who's really been tracking this particular story and giving it traction in the larger world. Erin is originally from Chicago. She worked for a green nonprofit. She has been a model. And fortunately for all of us, she has for some time now run a hugely successful health blog that you can find at www.healthnutnews.com. And I guess what really embodies it most for me about Erin is that she herself embodies the expression that she mentions in her autobiographical video, which you can find on that website. The expression is, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. You would not know it talking to Erin or looking at Erin that she, first of all, is the only person I've ever met who survived her own abortion. I mean, the attempt to abort her, she actually survived it. It was discovered that her mother, after the abortion, was still pregnant with Erin. So then she was given up for adoption. At an early age, she suffered extreme vaccine injury, including fever and seizures. She's a survivor of Lyme disease and many other afflictions I won't even go into. But the point of it to me is that she is a living expression that there is a light at the end of the tunnel. So she's been interviewed on Red Ice, on We Are Change, on Guyam, and many, many other news outlets, and we're thrilled to have her on Thrive Together today. So secondly, I'd like to introduce her partner, Joseph Mercola, who is a doctor of osteopathy, probably my favorite type of Western doctor. He's also from Chicago. He was a chief resident in family practice at the Chicago Osteopathic Hospital and then board certified by the American College of Osteopathic General Practitioners and a state of Illinois licensed physician and surgeon. He worked at an eye bank, he worked at a kidney bank, and he's worked as a solo practitioner, and it was during that practice that he was prescribing drugs but ultimately realized that they weren't working. So again, fortunately for the rest of us, that has led to a whole new path in his particular offerings of healing, which we'll get into. Joe loves to run, which is an understatement for someone who finished the Chicago Marathon in just over 3 hours. Most importantly for me, he has expressed on his website that his passion is to transform the traditional medical paradigm in the United States. That's a powerful thing coming from someone like Joseph. And to that end, he has been the author of at least 9 books that I know of, including at least 3 New York Times bestsellers and more medical publications than I could ever read through Monday. And his website, Mercola.com, is consistently one of the top health sites on the entire internet. He's appeared on all the major networks, CNN, Dr. Oz, and so forth. And he has been, most importantly for the rest of us, a pioneering truth teller in such critical arenas as GMO, aspartame, getting off drugs, vaccines, healthy food and effective exercise. And most recently, I'm hoping I can get him to talk a little bit about this later on in the show, he's been working with Travis Christofferson on getting out a new cancer cure. That when I heard him talk about it, I went and watched the video where they go into great depth on this, and this is one of the most exciting things I've heard of in quite a while. I know he's dedicating a lot of time to both getting himself educated and getting the word out on that, and so hopefully we'll hear about that a little later on. So why don't you bring on both Aaron and Joe, and before we get into the topic of assassinations, I'd just like for each of them to come on, starting with you, Aaron, and just say for a moment why you're interested in this topic and why you were willing to take the time to come on with
Thank
us today.
Thank you for having me, Foster. Can you hear me okay? Am I on?
We can.
Well, I think it just... It really was all by accident that this started when I had seen Dr. Bradstreet found dead, and that hit the news and mainstream, and I think they really vilified him. And I felt that another side needed to be shown, and I wrote that article never knowing then that we would lose so many more in this small holistic community of doctors. It's really not, so many of them know each other or know of each other. And so it just, like I call it the unintended series, because unfortunately we just kept losing more and more, including friends who we knew, some close. And I just felt like I needed to get the word out, even though people said you can't write about this, or you got even some people in our own community that were opposed to that just felt that it shouldn't be talked about. And it did need to be talked about. So.
Well, great. Well, thank you for your courage and all of your work on this and your support of the families and for taking the time to come on today. So, Joseph, I know this isn't your usual particular area, but I really appreciate your support of Aaron and you're taking the time to come on. So why don't you come on and express a little bit what your interest is in it?
Well, I've been a big fan of Thrive and your work for quite a while, and especially your work in free energy. So I just thought it would be an interesting opportunity to connect with you and your network. And also like to support Erin and her work, and you know, just really add anything I can from my perspective. But really, most of this work has been done by Erin.
Well, great. We can't see your image yet, so if you can click on your webcam.
Yes, yes. Let's see, where is my webcam?
We don't want to miss your handsome face during this conversation.
Should be to the right of your name.
I lost it. Oh, okay, I see it. There we go. All right. Is that
okay? Great. There
Sorry
he is. All right. Well, happy Valentine's Day to both of you, or weekend anyway. So, Aaron, why don't you go ahead and bring us up to speed? I think most people have read some about this, but give us an overview. There's so many cases now. We don't have time to go into the details of them, but if you could give us an overview and just highlight a few of the representative cases to give us a sense, and there'll be some people on the call who are not familiar with this topic yet, give us a sense of the personal stories of what's going on and some of the themes that are involved that are emerging in common to these individual tragedies.
Well, it really did start with Dr. Jeff Bradstreet, a medical doctor who was found dead June 19th of last year. So I don't even think that's 9 months ago. And I think we might have a picture of him here. And this photo is important, even though it's a little blurry, because that's him on the right. But that was his colleague who lived here locally, like a bike ride away from where I am right now. And here's another photo of him. But that first photo that they had, is Paige Adams. And she was the only one in the, I've kind of included her in the series. She's the only one who's not a doctor of some sort, whether MD or DODC, but she was a board certified nurse practitioner, young, and also found dead again, just here local in our local community and here in Florida, maybe 10 days ago or so. Wow. And they worked together, and that's taken kind of a, I think, a still shot of a video they were about to do professionally where he was introducing Paige Adams and explaining how she'd been a colleague for many years and they'd worked together. So she's the last one in our series, so to speak, and Dr. Bradstreet would be the first. And then, you know, we have many in between, but like you said, so many, it would take too much time, but we could highlight a few so we could go on to maybe another picture of, and there's another one of Dr. Bradstreet, who I never had the fortune of meeting, but he was such a happy person. From watching now so many of his interviews, he really had this, I think, and I know his family can say much better, but just I loved his dry sense of humor and no history of depression, and just a very likable person, really.
And why don't you just describe what happened to Jeff, because it's so representative of what we're facing here.
Yes, sure. Well, he had had his office raided, and the Bradstreets can fill any of this in here, but just from what I understand, he had had his office raided several days before, by the FDA, which other doctors have gone through that same type of thing, and even, you know, Joe dealing with the feds. And so they did not arrest him. They did not charge him with anything. And but it may be that they were looking for GCMAF, which we can get into later, but we don't know. But there was no arrest made, nothing. So then after that, understandably, he wanted a little vacation. So he and his wife went. They had been here in Melbourne, Florida, but then now he was practicing outside Atlanta. So they went just north of there to North Carolina to get away for the weekend. It was a holiday weekend, and have a relaxing time. And his room wasn't ready. He tried to check in at the small inn, probably a place where he could get away and just be away from everyone. So he went to the store and got some hummus, and it's just off the top of my head, Perrier, and I think a bottle of wine for them to enjoy. And then I guess, as the official story, they're trying to say, but the investigation has not been complete, and the Bradstreets, if they feel like, can elaborate on this. On his way back to the hotel to meet his wife, decided to pull over on the side of the road and take his own life in a river and shoot himself in the chest, somehow in the water, and was found dead. So that's what they would like. That's kind of the what mainstream immediately put out there without an investigation being complete, which I think is irresponsible, because the case is not closed. And there are many experts who do not feel that he, not only didn't he take his life, but it would have been impossible for him to do so in the manner in which they state.
Yeah, it just makes no sense at all, obviously.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Hi. I'm wondering, could you just describe for anybody the gist of what he was doing?
Oh, of course. Oh, well, yes. We spoke, Dr. Mercola and I spoke at a local event, and one of his patients came with their child. This is a great example because we're in Florida, so he used to practice for some time in Melbourne, and she came with her child, who was a nonverbal, did have autism and was low functioning. And I don't know if she specifically said that he had used GCMAF, which used to be legal here in the United States, but she brought the child, who they have videos of, wasn't able to talk, speak, make eye contact, and he was fine, and asking her when they were going to go eat inside. So she said he changed. I think I get emotional 2 minutes in, but she just said he changed her life, and he changed her child's life and her life, and that this child went from being nonverbal and just sitting there asking her, like, when they're going to eat, and that she owed him so much, and that's why she wanted to drive a couple hours to meet us, and just because to tell us about what he had done for her, but what he, what mainly what in his practice is he helped children who were autistic and put them into remission. He would never say, use the words from what I understand, to cure them or to, you know, but he would put them into remission. And I have met now in person at least that family, and which was just such such confirmation for me, but also talk with countless others who write every day about what he did for, especially for their children, working with autism and cancer, but primarily autism. And he has still has an autistic son who has autism. So it was very near and dear to his heart to help these children, and helped a lot of lives.
Yeah. Thank you. Let's go on to some of the others.
Okay. Yes, we can go to the next photo. So then within 48 hours on Father's Day, Bruce Hedendahl here in Florida was found dead in his car. As you can see here, he was probably the oldest out of all the doctors, but he was in amazing shape. So he had been in an event that day. And I don't remember, I've spoken to loved ones and of his that are very close to him. I don't know if it was an actual competition or just like where they're doing like the disc throwing. It was a practice or competition, but he was in great health. He not only was a chiropractor, but had a PhD from Harvard in nutrition. And also I have patients writing all the time who say they go in with this stage or that stage cancer, and that he was able to put them into remission. And he just kind of, not that all chiropractors aren't extraordinary, but he was just really extraordinary. So, and he was just, yeah, knew him well. I just wish I would have had the opportunity to meet him. I've listened to his shows now on, because he also had a radio show that was very popular. All of these doctors were extraordinary, but especially these guys. And again, we don't really know what happened, this happened 2 days after I found out about Dr. Bradstreet. So on Father's Day, I had a friend who worked there doing thermography in his office, and she notified me that he died. And we won't go into another doctor that also in Florida was found dead just hours away from him at only 33 years old. So yeah. It's just really endless and hard to believe that mainstream hasn't covered this. But yeah, that was Dr. Bruce Hedendahl, who would have been in his 60s and in great health up until he suddenly died.
Yeah, that is not the look of somebody who doesn't want to live.
I know. Oh, yeah. He was all about living. From what I've got to hear from those very close to him who were in his personal life. And yeah, he's just amazing. And even listening to his show. Yeah, it's inspiring.
Okay, next one.
Yes, would be. So, yeah, we had several in between here. And I think, again, we had so many who died on the same day. So like Dr. Hedendahl, having Dr. Baron Holt die on the same day, we also had Dr. Nick Gonzalez, who was well-loved, and another Dr. Abdul Kamir, found dead both on the same day, both on the East Coast. And Dr. Gonzalez was a best-selling author. He was, Dr. Mercola had interviewed him numerous times, and he was also helping patients like the two others with cancer. And we did not attend the funeral in New York and in New York City, but the church was packed. They say, even Suzanne Summer said this in a video that she did, with people that had like stage 4 pancreatic cancer and were going to die. And now 20 years later, they're like, here I am. Thanks to Dr. Gonzalez. He was also Suzanne Summer's personal doctor. And just again, I've had the honor to meet his wife. Was just an amazing, extraordinary doctor who was saving lives and getting people better, putting people into remission, and well known for that, for his work too. So
this is actually how I heard about this whole thing to begin with, because one of the breakthrough healers that we work in our Thrive Connect initiative was very close with Dr. Gonzalez, and he was the one who told me, hey, did you hear what happened to Nick? And that's when I ran across your stories that this was happening to not only to him, but to others. And yet just the amazing gratitude of so many people in the networks that these people were not only healing specifically, but they were bringing out truths that were changing how we relate to vaccines, how we relate to autism, how we relate to cancer.
Oh, yes, definitely. With all of them, not even just the ones we're mentioning, they were also vocal about that. And I might add that in his very last interview, which is on now on YouTube, I Joe and I didn't do it, but someone else did. He did say that he had heard that they wanted him dead. He said that several times. And if he's hit by a bus, or he said hit by a truck, he used both those euphemisms, because he essentially said in the interview, unless they take me out, or until I hear they would like to not have me alive, and if until I'm hit by a bus or taken out, kind of thing. He said that straight out in the video. And he was just extraordinary. It's another point, but I can't remember. But yeah, it's a shame. It's just really a shame to have lost.
We'll get to the implications and what we can try to do to help this from happening in the future. But let's visit a few more of the cases.
And yeah, I should just say, on if there is another picture of him, this is real quick. One last thing. Initially, they thought that the cause of death was a heart attack. And since his wife has been public about this, even on a site, she said, this is him with Dr. Gonzalez with Suzanne Summers, that when the autopsy, by this point, some people at the beginning weren't doing autopsies. So she did an autopsy and they showed no heart attack, as they tried to tell them at the beginning. Well, it must have been a heart attack. How else does that happen? And actually they can at this point, is that the latest I have seen, find no cause of death. So I just wanted to put to.
Okay. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. So next we have Dr. Mitch Gaynor, who had been on Dr. Oz numerous times, and I am told was a personal friend. I mean, from my seat over the years, it looks like he's been on the show and pictures of them together at various times. But here he is on the show, and I believe I just got to glance at this segment because I'd only seen the other one. But he's talking about he was an MD, and Mitch Gaynor talked a lot about using energy, sound healing, and he also was treating cancer patients and having great success. Countless patients of his have written me, even doctors who were patients of his, who have reached out to me. And with Dr. Gaynor, he had this book that just came out, had talked to Joe on the phone about the book not that long ago, and then again was found dead and almost immediately in outside New York City, in a small small town. A lot of these happen to be in small towns like Dr. Bradstreet and the rest, was ruled suicide almost immediately. I guess he just suddenly decided, in the midst of a book coming out and all these great things and being on Dr. Oz, just having been on RT, Russian Times, on TV, just getting tons of press, there he is, then took his own life. And nobody I talk to says they're buying that story.
Yeah.
Maybe being in New York, he was able to get a lot of press because of the great work he was doing. And that show, that other picture, which everybody saw with him on Dr. Oz, if I'm correct on the dates that Dr. Oz posted, it was just weeks before he allegedly took his own life. And the show as well. Both of those were recent. So.
Okay, next one.
Then here we have Jamie Zimmerman, and in the official series, I did not include any accidental deaths, but I just felt that hers was significant, and I did review some of the videos last night. I was up a little late looking through them I wanted to watch this again. She had been recently brought on as ABC national news correspondent. She also, which it's publicly out there stated, was doing a joint venture and partnering with Deepak Chopra. Of course, we all know another holistic MD. She was on her show talking about meditation, self-described as a natural, holistic, practicing holistic medicine. I don't know if that was her complete practice, but for ABC to have brought on a correspondent nationally at 31 years old, she'd accomplished so much. There are videos. She's already made a documentary. So she's was amazing for her age. And she was vacationing in Hawaii, and I think it was on the Big Island. And she was walking, not on a cliff or anything, but just in an area where on the video I watched last night, they explained there were no high tides, no nothing, just down on the ground. And she allegedly fell just from the distance from her head to the ground, supposedly hit her head and was carried out to sea, where then she was seen, but allegedly no witnesses, again, like Dr. Gaynor and the others at the time of her were her fall or death. So they say she drowned and then would have had blunt force, I guess, trauma to the head. So,
Erin, I think in order to make sure we have plenty of time for the other topics of exploration, why don't you talk about how many of these stories we could have gone into now, and then let's move on to what are the themes that are in common amongst them.
Sure. I think she was the last one there. So that was, and then we just have the group photos, but
yeah, why don't you bring those up too? Yeah.
Those are the next one. So that was it. What was it? I know that's a lot. It gets kind of detailed on some of those, but with all these doctors, again, some were even found dead on the same day, from osteopaths to others. I think I have 13 that were in the kind of the official series, but then not counting those 29 holistic doctors who were sick and poison, we would have 33 or 34 in total. I think it's 33 from when you start with Dr. Bradstreet and wind up on here, where that was just the holistic doctors in the ambulances that did survive. And then these are more pictures of doctors found dead, many under mysterious circumstances. We have the one in the corner who allegedly fell off a balcony at his house, was a vegan cardiologist, outspoken in holistic practices as well. And so with the total, it would be 33 others, some in mysterious car accidents who even the authorities say don't add up. These are all holistic doc. I think every one of those doctors there would be holistic doctors. And this was all within, I think every one of them would have been in the last year. So that's, So 33 total.
So what do you see as the major themes that are in common to many of these people who were taken out?
With everyone, they were not just, even like especially with the chiropractors who some might think are just doing maybe adjustments, or even with the medical doctors or DOs, most, there were a few exceptions, but most were holistic, and many were going beyond their, say with the chiropractors, just normal, maybe doing adjustments and helping patients like Dr. Heidendahl with overcoming serious illnesses, terminal illnesses. So I'd say, that they were extraordinary, and many were outspoken about vaccines. Not everyone, but I mean, when you have a chiropractor, some people might not, that's his PhD and has a radio show and very outspoken, like many of others of them were too, that spoke publicly and had traveled around the country. They weren't your normal, maybe just kind of small town variety doctors.
As best I could tell, many of them were working with the autism vaccine connection, some with cannabis oil, some with the GICMAF, this enzyme that seems to really boost the immune system against cancer. So it seems to me, if you had to boil it down, they were doing effective jobs at both helping patients and getting the word out on alternatives that might be very effective and well might undermine the sickness business in one way or another, which is, most people know, it's multi-trillion-dollar business.
Oh, yeah, yes. Because of the platforms many of them had, big platforms, not only were they writing about it, talking about it, Dr. Bradstreet and others did TV shows on just those things out on vaccines.
Okay, well, thank you for that update, and thank you for bringing this story to light. What I'd like to do is take just a few minutes to share a little bit of an overview of my research. I've been researching assassinations, unfortunately, for over a decade. And so it gives me the opportunity to look at the themes that are in common to a bunch of them. So so let me just say how some of my research relates to what it is that you're sharing. First of all, you know, George Bernard Shaw is known for saying, amongst many other things, assassination is the extreme form of censorship. So in going from this kind of micro scenario to the macro and looking at other sectors, there were in the early 2000s, in the first 3 or 4 years of after the millennium, there were over 30 microbiologists who were found dead under suspicious circumstances. And if Goa, if you can bring up a picture of that, that'll help to just make this a human story. So you can see the similarity. You get a particular area, and then all, and these happen within a short amount of time. So these are many people who were working on different biowarfare things, on anthrax and so forth. And fundamentally, they were people who were in the know on what the shadow government, what the agencies, what the secret societies were doing, ironically enough, developing ways of killing other people who might get in the way of their agendas. So then we move on to the military. You know, a lot of you know, probably know the Pat Tillman story. I won't go into that in depth now. He was an NFL football hero who went to, you know, fight the so-called terrorists and ended up being killed under friendly fire after he had gotten a sense of what was really going on over in the Middle East, and he and his brother were eager to start talking about it. But this would go back to the other one on the military. There should be one more. Yeah, here we go. Many of you probably weren't aware beyond the fact that we were told that Osama bin Laden was finally killed, but we never saw pictures of it, never saw video, and then his body was dumped at sea. That was very suspicious to me, particularly because my sources had told me that he'd actually died years earlier. But the most shocking bit of information that really seemed to tip the scales for me on what really went on this is that 30 amongst these 38 dead died in a helicopter crash. Of the team that supposedly took this guy out, 30 of them were killed in a helicopter crash, and then the rest of them were taken out died under mysterious circumstances. Let's put it that way. So if hypothetically, I wanted to silence anyone who was in the know about what really happened with SEAL Team 6 and this so-called assassination of Osama bin Laden. The only way that I would be secure in trying to sequester that knowledge would be to make sure those people wouldn't be alive to talk. So look at, I mean, these were all highly trained people in self-defense and yet all taken out one way or another. Okay, let's go on to the next one, next image, Goa. There have been a lot of rumors about the suspicious things that have happened surrounding the Clintons for the last 20 to 30 years, you know, from the MENA, Arkansas CIA drug smuggling to the whole Whitewater scandal and then on into Bill's administration and a lot of Hillary's activities with Benghazi and so forth. And I had originally heard 33. I went back to check, and now it's closer. It's between 60 and 70 suspicious deaths in, surrounding them, the only one of which most people know is Vince Foster, who's pictured on the left there, who supposedly shot himself on a bench by a lake, you know, near the White House. Okay, so that's enough on the images. But let me just mention some other areas so that you can see the theme here. There have been, as many of you may know, over the last year or two, many suspicious deaths of bankers. There have been over 70 of them. We've reported on a lot of them through Thrive. And a number of these, you know, supposedly jumped off of buildings or were seen falling backwards off of a ledge and or, you know, hung in their own closet, you know, before they were getting married or something. Again, just not the circumstances that you would imagine them being suicidal. But again, many of them worked in the risk management level of these big banks, and they had a lot of inside information on the rigging of the gold market, the Forex market, of the LIBOR interest rate market, and so forth. So again, when the top people don't want investigations to be able to follow the money and the power chain all the way up to them, their strategy is often to take out the middleman. Aaron did an article recently on journalists who've been killed. There were over 2,000 cited in that article. Many people have probably heard of the carjacking of, or car hacking, really, of Michael Hayes McChrystal, and he had been harassed by FBI agents, just like Jeff Bradstreet was literally the day before that. He supposedly crashed his car, but you know, anybody who's in the know on these things know that they can take over and hack those cars, and there was evidence of explosives in the car. And Andrew Breitbart, who was coming out with a story on Obama just before the election, was killed. Gary Webb, the famous journalist from the San Jose Mercury, was exposing the CIA drug smuggling and then was found shot twice in the head. I mean, this one, it would make you laugh if it weren't so tragic. You know, who has the wherewithal to shoot themselves the second time in the head? Then in the area of energy inventors, which cuts close to home for us, I've been involved in this field for 15 years. And as we reported in Thrive, the movie, Gene Malov was suspiciously beaten to death the day before he was going on Coast to Coast with David Wilcock to talk about new breakthroughs in cold fusion. Stanley Meyer was disappeared after he went public with his automobile engine that ran on water. Several acquaintances of ours, Adam Trombley and his partner Farnsworth and John Bedini and Paul Pantone. Paul Pantone died recently, but he was literally kidnapped, institutionalized, and then basically drugged to almost to death because he was also coming out with a water engine. And Farnsworth and Trombley were on their way to demonstrate of their free energy motor at the UN and at the Senate when they were stopped by Bush Sr. And then their lab was raided and their lives were threatened. And they both had to turn to other types of work in order to stay alive. So it goes on into voter fraud, election rigging. There have been at least seven clear assassinations having to do with the Choice Point, Diebold, and TrueVolt and TrueVote companies. There are a rash of assassinations around the whistleblowers on the international pedophilia rings at the high level of the judiciary, of the police, and of top-level government people. And unfortunately, I could go on and on with this, but my point is to make the pattern clear that there are very powerful would-be controllers who don't want the truth coming out. They don't want healing. They don't want prosperity. They want power and control, and they've made it clear over and over again that they would not only be willing to assassinate an individual, they would be willing to start fake wars that would cost the lives of millions of individuals. And not only would they be willing to do that, but if you study the lives of these sociopaths and psychopaths who are at the top of these power silos, there's a lot of evidence and testimony that they actually get off on it. So it's tragic, but we need to understand this if we're going to be effective at eliminating the obstacles to getting these healthy alternatives out. So, okay, so I want to have a brief roundtable on, okay, so given all of this tragic information, what are the implications? In other words, what can we actually deduce from the weight of the evidence that can help us stay alive, be effective, get the word out, you know, and bring out a real solution? So first of all, I invite Aaron and Joe to, if there are any implications that you see, that things that we can learn from all of this, I invite you to offer them, and then Kimberly and I have a few that we'll offer as well.
Joe, would you like to go first, since I've been...
No, you certainly can do that.
Okay. That's a great question, Foster. I think part of the thing for me is just letting people know I don't want to live in fear, and letting others know that they've got to carry on the message and the wonderful work they're doing and not live in fear. That's part of it for me with what people can do is, first of all, not be fearful. We can't live in fear. So that would be my first thing. Yeah. And, that's an important one.
Well, that's certainly an important principle to follow. But I think it's also important to recognize that, first of all, that these events are occurring, so to be aware that that's a possibility, and as a result of that, take reasonable precautions. You know, lock your house, make sure you have a security system, and just be alert. If you believe in firearms, as I do, you could get, or you can take firearms training and have a weapon in your home. But you need to be trained. If you focus on this and become paranoid and obsessive about it, it's really going to distract from your life mission. So I think to be just to be sensible and cautious.
Yeah, thank you for that.
Reasonable strategy.
The Sufis have an expression which I've always found helpful, which is have faith in Allah, but tie your camel to the post. And I think that we can learn from this, as you both are saying, to take it seriously. And one of the challenges that Goa and Kimberly and I have in working with a lot of the breakthrough innovators in our Thrive Connect network is getting them to take the security seriously enough to have protection, have a security system, have bodyguards in critical situations that are apt to be risky. So I totally agree that it can be paralyzing to live in fear. And the best way I find not to live in fear is be true to your mission and at the same time address whatever concerns you have in a practical manner. I want to add that for me, one of the major implications is that these patterns of assassinations are unfortunate and tragic confirmations that these breakthrough innovators have something that is of great value to humanity. A lot of people who haven't actually ever seen a free energy device and are very skeptical about it, one of the things I can say to them is, do you think that the shadow government or whoever they are, do you think they would really be spending all the time and the money and taking the personal risks to raid these particular laboratories or even assassinate people if they didn't think that they had something real, if they were just a bunch of hoaxers and scammers? And I've visited, you know, many, many, many energy inventors. And again, it's the ones who are most successful who are the ones that are most apt to get harassed, because the powers that be, they have a lot of information on this stuff. They can recognize the real stuff because they've usually stolen patents, they've raided laboratories, and so they can actually recognize the real stuff, and that's who tends to get rated. And I think it can also be a reminder to us to stick together, you know, get to know one another and collaborate, share resources, share security advice, and then collaborate to optimize the chances of success, and particularly share strategies. There are a whole spectrum of strategies for getting these things safely out, and it runs from, you know, traditional venture capital to open source. You know, just be compensated by someone, if possible, to just dump the knowledge on the internet, because then you're no longer the sole keeper of the knowledge, and then there's no purpose in taking you out. It actually brings attention to your breakthrough. So we've gone into some of those strategies in other sessions, but these are some of the implications that I think that if we integrate them and learn from them, then some of these innovators will not have died in vain. Kimberly, anything you want to add to that?
Well, you know, for me, a big part of it is for sure the being informed and incorporating the knowledge into, because, you know, absolutely not living from fear is where it's at. And I find that the more informed I am, the better choices I can make. And I remember when we first came out with Thrive, and our security folks said, okay, you can't eat anything that anybody just gives you, right, when you're out and about in the world. And it was so, you know, people would come really graciously and generously with gifts they made for us, you know, like, oh, some offering. And I thought, it takes getting used to, but I understand, of course, there are people fed into the field here, given what we're doing, who are not going to be safe for us. And so just as a blanket, I'm going to make some changes in how I relate to things. I think of my phone as a spy in the room. Like, I just had to switch from thinking of it as a communication device to realizing that it is a spy in the room. And so I don't do things with the phones in the room if I don't want to be communicating that to anybody. So I think just kind of getting used to that. And then on the deepest level, for me, in terms of fear, it was to realize that I believe we're in times where not speaking out is equally dangerous. I think we become a little more targeted potentially as being spokespeople, but the reason that we're spokespeople is because everyone is at serious risk. And if we're not speaking out, you know, we run the risk of just being chipped and medicated and enslaved. That's really what's at stake here. So to me, the thought of just taking that quietly out of fear is like, then they've already accomplished what they've set out to do. And I'm not willing to agree to that. So I feel so much more empowered as I speak out and stand to what I believe. And I also do it, you know, I really stay up on, and I'm deeply grateful to the security experts we have on our team who can keep me educated about, I mean, just the ways that the surveillance is coming at us in all the time through every little handy thing you sign up for. You know, I happen to read a lot of the terms and conditions of these online things, and it's sobering to say the least. So I do think in terms of what's at stake, and that really motivates me to speak up. And I think the other part of it is that you know, courage is it's a heart-based experience. I mean, both the base of the language, cor, from courage, is Latin for heart. And I think that it just feels so good to be grounded in my heart and find there the courage to move forward in alignment with my purpose and my passion. So I feel grateful. And the other thing I have to say is the people that I've been able to meet who also speak out, like our lovely guests today. It's so heartwarming and inspiring and encouraging to realize how many awake people there are speaking out. And it's one of the things that happened from putting Thrive out and having it in 27 languages and stuff. We just hear from people from all over the world. And there really are a lot of awake people doing great things and speaking out. So we're not alone, and it's important to remember that.
Thank you, Kimberly. Well, in a minute, we're going to move on to a discussion of what can we do about this type of situation. But before doing that, I want to go, if you can bring on Tom Brett. Tom and his wife are joining in the call today, and they said they'd be willing to come on and share a little bit about their experience. And Jeff Bradstreet was a real inspiration to me and continues to be. And what happened to him only makes my resolve stronger to bring out the truth in all of these different areas. But my heart just so goes out to the loved ones and families and friends of the people who have been specifically affected by this tragic agenda. So, Goy, is Tom available?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, you're coming through.
Yes, great. It's great. Tom, welcome. Thanks for coming on.
Well, thank you. I am here with my wife, Candace, and we've been sitting here listening to you guys, and we agree with you, everything that you said about the way that, you know, we can't live in fear, we can't create this paranoia, we have to empower ourselves in our level or our sphere of influence. We need to get out there and talk more and share this. You know, I had Andy Wakefield tell me, who's a doctor that's involved in autism, tell me that if you share everything and keep it right out in front of you, you have nothing to worry about. No longer are you valuable because your information's out there. So, you know, the information that we have and we've discovered through this investigation, we share it all. We want everybody to know the medical research and everything that's happened out there and the work that my brother did. And, you know, we've shared with the people that we know intimately. And you, when you look at the science, there's no disputing the science.
Yeah.
And it really makes sense. And then you start to, you work yourself back and go, well, why is this information being withheld from me? Well, then they really don't want me to get well. And then you start to change the way you think about things. Mm-hmm. And now you can move forward and you can start to really become an educated decision maker in your own health, own security, you know, and your family. And that's something that's really brought this to our life in the last 9 months, obviously.
Wow. Well, thank you for that. I want to ask both you and Candace, did you sense anything before this happened and or leading up to it? Was there concern on your part or on Jeff's part? Oftentimes, I know I've talked to rape victims and so forth, and they sense something before it happened. Was there any of that amongst your family?
Well, you know, Jeff played his cards really close.
Yeah.
He had, you know, without getting involved in a lot of history, and Joe, I'm sure you know, working in the medical community, as soon as he would come out with a good idea, somebody would take it and go make money off of it, and he really didn't have an opportunity. So he kept his cards very close to him. He was speaking at the end that to several of his peers that he was concerned, but not afraid, because he was aware of what was going on in the community and what was going on over in Europe. He realized that he was a high-profile individual in the world of autism. He had testified many times against the vaccine companies and was in Washington and dealt with all those discussions that were there. So, I mean, he was no dummy. He was making plans for the future. He was moving forward. He had just finished the Autism One conference in Chicago with lots of great information that was released, but still a lot more new stuff coming. So as far as him running, you know, afraid, we had no sense of that at all.
Okay. And Candace, when you and Tom are talking with friends or even strangers about this whole situation, what's it like in terms of being believed if you voice concerns about the hidden agendas behind an obviously very suspicious death?
Right. It's interesting to say the least, because obviously we, just like yourselves, have friends who definitely are awake. You know, I call it being awake. And then there are those that you talk to and you explain this, particularly with Jeff and what happened, and it's almost as though they don't want to believe it. I think for some people, they know it's going to mean a huge change in their lives, and some just choose to live in denial. But what's making me excited is there are a lot of people becoming awake and aware.
Yeah, thank you. One more question for you. What have you found? I mean, it must be challenging for your friends and family to know how, in a way, to relate to you after such a tragedy. What have you found is supportive? How can other people, how have they related to you that you have found to be effective? Welcome.
I think one of the amazing things that, you know, came out of this tragedy is that the amount of people that we've met just even through Facebook, and just a blessing that the whole autism community, they're a very, very tight group, and they just came right alongside of us. And the thing that encouraged us was getting emails or messages saying, don't stop, don't quit. We're behind you. We believe that he did not do this. So that has been so amazing and encouraging for us.
If I could just add on to that, I think, you know, it's great to hear the impact that my brother made on people's lives, and his passion was to inform people, and particularly mothers. Yeah, this is hard for mothers to become educated, that they were wise to their own children, and they need to be informed and empowered to make decisions for them. But, you know, to me, the backside of it is sad, because now this, you know, general in the field of the battle against autism or and that's difficult, because there's a group of folks out there that were really counting on the opportunity to see Jeff, and then when he was taken out, it was like now they're back to being hopeless again. It's like in Dr. Mercola's life, he's changed thousands and thousands of people's lives, and you know, if he was just to stop practicing medicine, it would affect a lot of people. Yeah, and that to us, that's the sad point, because we have kids in our church that are autistic, and we look and go, well, we used to know somebody that could really help you out, and we can't say that anymore.
Right, but we make it an effort to continue on his work in the best way that we've been able to at this point. And you know, many people were like, well, do you even want to get involved with, you know, the whole GCMAF thing, and it's like, yeah, because I'm so tired and fed up, like many people are, of when you learn the truth about what is really going on with our health, it just makes you angry, but it also inspires you to be the change and to be a positive change for people.
Well, that is so beautifully said. It's certainly true for us and so many people in our network that tragedies like this have only strengthened our resolve to expose these corrupt culprits and to get the truth out and get these healing cures out as well. So thank you for sharing all that, and feel free to come back on if there's anything else you want to share during all of these conversations. And so with that, why don't we move on to a little discussion about what can we do before opening it up to the general interactions. So in the blog that I wrote on this a few weeks ago, we mentioned a few of these things, and I just want to review them and invite people to say anything else that they think can be effective to empower people to be effective and active. So one of the things, obviously, that on any of these areas, what we've found is the first thing is always to get informed. And as you get more informed, share with others, even if it's socially uncomfortable. You know, pick your timing, but share it with people who you think are ready and capable to understand and integrate the information. And then use the media the same way that we're trying to use whatever access we have to the media. And, you know, send people to movies and to TV shows, you know, documentaries like Joe's The Game Changer, like the documentary Grounded, and the Bought and Marketing of Madness, The Truth About Cancer, movies like that that are exposing a lot of the scams and the truth about pharmaceuticals and disease. And I know that on the Mercola site, there's an incredible video library there that can give access to a lot of those things. I also want to highly recommend financial support. If any of you are out there wondering how you can help and you've got financial resources, offer them through Aaron's site or through what's called the IHCPO, which is a Native American Indigenous Healthcare Practitioners organization that can take in funds to help get private investigators to find out the truth, to help with the families that have been affected by assassinations like this, and to find out the truth, to file lawsuits, to fund PR campaigns and so forth. And Aaron, if you would, I would love it, while we're talking about media, if you would mention just a few minutes before we came on this call, I saw for the first time the trailer for The Power to Cure that Brian Hammers is doing. And he's doing an Indiegogo campaign right on this topic, obviously, that you're going to be a consulting producer on. If you would talk a little bit about that, and then we'll put a we'll post the link to the trailer and the Indiegogo campaign in our chat window. So could you talk a little bit about that project?
Sure, I'll keep it brief. Well, like the Bradstreets, because I showed it to them, we were all understandably leery when I got this email and Facebook note from this gentleman in LA and a young dad and husband, and he says he's made this thing, made this treatment, and his wife is in it, and some other people, and I clicked and wasn't really expecting much, like maybe in their living room with some cameras, and I was blown away by what I saw. It obviously is not, it is only based on the facts. It is not, I mean, he didn't have much to go on. He's just a young man, but what he put together and the money he spent of his own money, because he'd been following the stories and was so passionate and wasn't sure who to reach out or talk to. But I think his heart is in the right place. I believe that he wants to get the word out on this. He does work for TV and I think ESPN, but this was really the first film that he's making. And we have talked extensively because I wanted to make sure, kind of check him out. And I've talked to his wife and met the kids on Skype. And I believe that they have their heart in the right place, and that it is a very moving trailer, but again, is just kind of based on actual facts. It wouldn't be, he didn't know all the facts when he started making that treatment, but he is open with the Bradstreets or any families or myself helping to make it right, to get it as close as possible. And it's a very moving, and I can't imagine for the family, it's a difficult piece to watch, as you might have seen, and very moving. So,
yeah. Well, if anybody who's seen the movie The Big Short, you can see how powerful even a dramatic rendition can be in getting this reality, getting this way of thinking out to the world. And I don't know how many people know about David Crowley, but you know, Kimberly and I, we were advised by our security experts to keep everything completely under the radar until Thrive was out, you know, on thousands of hard drives and 10 languages in one day and all of that. And we always wondered, you know, what had that been really a necessary precaution? And we'll never know. But David Crowley, who is an Army veteran, was making a movie called Gray State about the encroaching police state in the United in America. And it was a combination of interviews with people like Alex Jones and Ed Griffin and so forth, interspersed with very well done dramatic scenes depicting what it's going to look like if we keep going into the police state that we're veering toward right now. And you can see the trailer online. Just look up Gray State. Super powerful. And unfortunately, a year ago Christmas, he and his wife and his 5-year-old daughter were found all shot in their cabin in the woods. And of course, the police said, oh, it's a murder-suicide because he must have had PTSD. Now, he had just been offered an extra $30 million from Hollywood to complete this film. This was his life's mission and so forth. So it is a risky endeavor, but it's a very powerful endeavor. So my takeaway from this is anytime there's a chance to support someone who is willing to take the risk, what's his name? You're from Brian. Yeah, Brian Hammers. Someone who's willing to take the risk and step out and talk about this stuff, you know, support them with funds, support them with whatever media you can, both to raise the money and to get this information out. Okay, so
I want to say one other thing I think that can be really helpful, and it's something I'm personally engaged with a lot, is that using the information about how the powers that be, you know, encroach on the our whistleblowing, our new technologies in all the different sectors, to then really develop the systems and the strategies for how to, you know, move money in ways that it can't be confiscated through the SWIFT system, and develop open source in a way that doesn't mean that you have to give up everything, you know, figure out the ways to have a license for something that can both produce revenue and at the same time get the knowledge out of one person's head. Like, there are specific strategies that minimize the extent to which someone's a target and also share it so that it really can get in the minds and creativity and engage the creativity and innovations of so many others at the same time. So I think there's a way to use all of this bad news. I know there is, because it's what I do and have been doing all these years, to use it to help inform my strategic solution thinking. It's like, all right, so if patent, the whole patent process is corrupt, then what can we do to create something that isn't patent dependent in order to get it out here? Or if something, you know, that's just one of many examples. But I think open source is going to be a huge player on this, because I think engaging people is a way that we really take advantage of the group mind and get safe at the same time. So that's one of the ones that intrigues me. And I think about these like structures for fulfillment and kind of the strategy behind getting it so that we can use how it's corrupt to make something that can safely come out. And it's why, you know, one of the things about our work, it's so comprehensive, you know, looking at the banking and how that happens, looking in the health industry and how it happens there, looking with the environmental stuff and how that goes, and how is Monsanto structured in its whole corporate structure just to be able to pull off what it does. Like, I look behind the scenes at all these things and then can come up with a more comprehensive strategy that can work for anybody in any of those fields to bypass the ways that they have of getting in the way. And that really happens with moving the money. And fortunately, there are alternative systems coming up all over the place now for everything from moving money to communicating more effectively. Like, you know, certainly understanding the surveillance helps inform the kind of encryption technologies that are needed and, you know, just how we can actually be communicating safely with one another. So I think it's important to remember that, because, and we can talk about this in the co-creative couple conversation about how, you know, how it works to not get bogged down. Because I think having a commitment to not being in fear, I certainly have that commitment and I'm in it. Fear isn't really so much the thing as just every now and then going, holy smokes, they really got this thing worked out, you know, on a lot of different fronts. So, okay, here we go, and get back on the horse, you know, and really help each other to do that. And I think that happens as we stay connected with each other also. And it's like, oh yeah, like, I was so inspired by the articles, Erin Elizabeth, that you did with this unintended series. It was so transparent and informed and real and heartfelt that it helped. It helped anybody looking into anything that's kind of hard to stomach. And I think the more that we know of each other and help share each other's work and just have it be known that we're all in this together, it's really, it's encouraging.
While we're talking about solutions, Joe, would you be willing to give a brief overview of this 3BP development? And we can put a link in chat on where people can see the conversation with you and Mr. Christofferson.
Well, 3BP is short for 3-bromopyruvate, which is a metabolite that inhibits a specific enzyme in a pathway with cancer. But really, it's a small artifact of the central discussion, which is that nearly 85 years ago, Dr. Otto Warburg, who was an MD, PhD, the most brilliant biochemist of the 20th century, discovered the metabolism of cancer. His lifelong ambition was to find a cure for cancer. And he was personal friends with Einstein and Max Planck, and he was a brilliant, brilliant guy. But his ideas never took off. Instead, it focused on the genetic theory. And Travis wrote a book, The Metabolic Theory of Cancer, which is just really phenomenal at exposing that whole transition of the focus on genetics and a shift away from the metabolic mitochondrial components, which lead, that dysfunction leads to the genetic nuclear damage that contributes to cancer. So if anyone has cancer, you know, we're looking at 1 in 2 basically in the country developing at one point in their life. So I'm sure almost everyone watching this either has or knows someone very close to them who has it. So I would strongly recommend picking up the book. You can go to my website and just type in Travis Christofferson, and I did an interview with him that was published last Sunday, and it was really, really well received. And as one of my health practices, I walk in the beach, walk in 2 hours a day, and I read 150 books last year. And this was the best book I read, and by far. There's no book came close. So it's because it really exposes a novel approach. I would strongly recommend getting it to understand this. I'm currently, it motivated me to write a new book, which I'm in the process of doing, that I hope will explain some more detail. But, you know, the time doesn't really allow to go into the specifics, but the article last week in the video interview I did with Travis goes into more detail.
Okay, great. Yeah, it's a super exciting development. When I heard that of all the information that you processed in a year, that was the one that compelled you the most. I went right after that. And if anybody can help spread the word on that, the more people know about this development, the more apt it is to get out. I know in the interview, you and Travis talk about how it got bogged down for at least a year in academic bureaucracy. I hope that doesn't continue.
Well, that was the 3DP, which is sort of a side tangent, but Dr. Okay. Young Ko is a Korean scientist who developed it. I don't know many people personally who would warrant a Nobel Prize, but she should definitely get a Nobel Prize. I mean, the woman is brilliant, humble, and really, I guess, representative of a lot of the people that you connect with in the free energy movement, too.
Great. Okay, any one of the panelists have anything else you want to offer to the what can we do discussion before we open it up to the larger group? Okay, then Kimberly, do we have some questions or comments queued up to bring somebody on?
Not really. Here we have a lot of people listening in, not on the really on topic. There's stuff on Keshi.
Okay. This sometimes can be such a riveting and challenging conversation. People are probably still processing a lot, so maybe we'll just move on and we'll see if questions do come in. On that, I want to mention while we're still on solutions that anybody in my network knows that no matter what issue I'm talking about, when it gets to solutions, sooner or later, it comes, from my perspective, it comes back to the what we call the liberty perspective. And that's the manifestation of the non-aggression principle, where no one's allowed to either violate, you know, to injure, steal from, or commit fraud against another individual except in true self-defense. And I just want to point out how this issue as well, if the medical establishment was not subsidized and protected by the government, which is run by the big corporations and the banks, and the secret societies, they wouldn't have the power to get away with this type of thing. And there would be plenty of money to go to hire the investigators to find out who's doing this and then hold them personally liable, not protected by the government, not protected by corporate liability. So in a free, in a truly free society, which I think we're moving toward, but with excruciating slowness, there would be an alignment of the patient's needs, the doctor's needs, and the health insurer's needs, where doctors would get, you know, paid to keep patients healthy, and where insurance companies would be inspired to, as well, keep the patient healthy and not put up with these companies that repress solutions to these diseases, which are, you know, killing millions of people. So once again, if we come back to actually unleashing the creativity through allowing people to do what they're doing, as long as they're not violating anyone, and so that they're not completely restricted by overburdensome licensing or put out of business by state subsidies to the big pharma and that sort of stuff, or overburdensome regulation, all of this stuff will have a chance to come out, and I think we'll see a tsunami of health and prosperity and creativity unleashed. So speaking of creativity, let's go on to our last topic of discussion, which is this what Goa nicknamed in our discussion the other day as a team, co-creative couples thriving in treacherous times. So it's a unique opportunity we have here to talk to another couple, both of whom are taking on very serious issues in very effective ways. And whenever you're taking on a serious issue, especially if you've got a serious solutions, then there are going to be risks. There are going to be challenges. So I would love to just ask Aaron and Joe to comment on the blessings and the challenges of being a couple. I don't know to what extent you work on the same projects, but I know you're in the same area, and I know you can't help but talk to each other and learn from each other, you know, and related to whatever it is you're doing individually. So I'd love to hear about the blessings and challenges of being in a couple relating to this type of topic.
I can start, unless, Joe, you wanted to.
Feel free to start.
Thanks, honey. Well, I think that Joe's been an inspiration. Even before we met, where I jokingly say I manifested him, where he contacted me about my health retreats, not knowing I'd followed him for years, which is another wonderful story. But I'd been following him, and he's been a real inspiration. I was fortunate enough to kind of help, just kind of almost like a hobby at the beginning when we met, and then we were traveling, and I stopped doing those health retreats because of that, that I would help do a little content submission and send in some articles. And you can't help but around Joe, with his amazing energy, get kind of wrapped up in it and excited and passionate about, you know, what he does. And I think it then inspired me to just kind of start my site. But I think he can also understand, having had this huge successful health site for so many years, how many hours the last 2 years, especially since the deaths, doctor deaths, that I've been working, because things did grow. It was because of a tragedy that they grew on the site. But yeah, he's been very, very supportive and just wonderful. And I think because it is a depressing subject, there was a point where I felt pretty down during all this, and he definitely helped kind of keep me sane and inspire me during that time and encourage and support me. So that's
okay. Great. Thank you. And Joe?
Well, it's been a great blessing to be connected with Erin. She balances me out in so many ways. I think that's the key thing, because I tend to focus. We have a highly complementary set of characteristics. And one of the ways that someone watching this can find out how to interact with your partner, spouse, or business associates is there's a really, really good tool called Strength Finders. I think it's one word, but you could just type it in Google and find it. And it's a test that you can take online. And it will give you, it takes about maybe half hour, 45 minutes to complete. And then it gives you an assessment as to what your strengths are. It really focuses on strengths. And then we hired a coach to walk us through that and really help us understand. It's really interesting when we did the analysis, because I'm a passionate learner. I mean, my coach never really found anyone that was as passionate about learning as I am. We're as important for Erin, but she's a relational person. So that's why I think really people are so inspired to connect with her. And she's just, you know, she's able to really connect with people in a profoundly deep way. So, you know, it's great that we know that and we understand that we've got our challenges, of course, like every couple. But, you know, it's just I'm just enormously grateful to have Erin in my life, because she really is an amazing balancing influence and provides a proper perspective, helps support. And she's just so forgiving, because I screw up all the time. I mean, regularly. I mean, it's just amazing how much I screw up, and she's just always so forgiving. I've never encountered anyone like her in my life. So,
well, I can really relate to everything that you're saying. Kimberly, any comments?
Oh, well, geez, it's been so fabulous. I mean, I think it's for me, it's this dance always of the the union and the autonomy, because, like, you know, same for us, we have really complementary skills. And I've known as a producer from way back, the best way to build a team is to pick people with really diverse skill sets, because you don't need people who are doing the same thing. You need people who aren't, so that you can really mirror and reflect back to one another and just cover that much more ground. So, yeah, I feel like that, and just like, really, we're just super honest. I feel like that's it about what's true, what's truly going on at any given time, so that we can really help each other. And I think, you know, the shared values and a shared basic worldview and a commitment to curiosity, and bringing that curiosity, even just if something doesn't feel right, it's like, so what's going on, instead of jumping to some conclusion about it. And I have to say, I am so grateful. Like, I think it would be really challenging to do this work without a partner who shares the common understanding of what's really going on. And we've met a lot of people in the network whose partners aren't alongside them in this awakening process. And so that would be a whole other path that I admire, and I'm grateful that it's not mine at this time, because having Foster and also just kind of dealing with each other's quirks in this whole thing, you know, like, I can talk about anything at night as long as it doesn't sound like it might lead to a task for me in the morning, because I'm like the producer gal here, you know, so I'm like, oh, I don't want to think about anything like that. But I can talk about, and like, so where's the global takeover at today? I mean, like, we can have those kind of conversations instead. And Foster wakes up kind of quiet and philosophical, and I start the day going, okay, so, you know, jump right in. And so as long, you know, we just learned each other's ways on the timing and what's unique to each of us in what's particularly hard to handle or what is, because you can't, it's not all rational. Like, who knows? Like, I just really need some, my thing is every now and then I really need some aimless meandering. Like, we're so on task and so on it all the time. Like, just, okay, create the space to just really allow my intuition and my feeling and just, you know, sweet time with my grandkids or whatever it is to happen also. So and to me, that just comes from, you know, remembering that in the beginning and in the end, it's a relationship with ourselves that we're really talking about. Because if I can reflect honestly where I'm at, then I'm confident that Foster will respond compassionately in the same for me with him. So, yeah, I guess that's...
Speaking of the relationship, I know when Kimberly and I set out to make Thrive, we knew it was going to be a big task. We didn't have any idea how big, thank goodness, because it was an 8-year labor of love. But we sat down and we made two agreements. And one of the first one was that the relationship would always come first, that the artistic tension, the deadlines, none of that would ever be justified in precluding the quality of our relationship. And that was really helpful to have as our true north. And the second one was that since we had literally over a million decisions to make together, that neither of us would ever get sold out on the decision. So we agreed that we wouldn't stop in the process of making the movie till neither of us had a cringe factor. And we do the same thing now on when we put out, you know, a blog or a post on social media or something like that. We don't put it out until each of us feels like, okay, yes, that sufficiently represents me. So for those of you who are out there challenged by co-creative relationships, if you haven't looked at those two agreements, I highly recommend them. The other thing I've really noticed in being in relationship with Kimberly so intimately during such an endeavor is how critical open-mindedness is. I mean, people's worldview matters tremendously because it shapes your action. And fortunately, Kimberly's and my worldview are so similar that it really helps us be more easily aligned on things. But it really, worldview is like a snapshot. It's the quality of maintaining open-mindedness. that I think is the critical aspect in having your best friend also be your most intimate work colleague. Because particularly in the type of thing that we work on, and I know this must be true for Joe and Aaron as well, there's so many mind-blowing things that come down the pike that it's important to be able to just have a conversation about them with your loved one and to be able to try it on without buying it. And we find that not only with each other, but with our team and the people in our network, that there's all kinds of intelligence. But these days, open-mindedness may be the most important one of all when combined with enough discernment to find out, you know, what's true and then grounded in useful action. Another thing that I find is really helpful in having a partner like Kimberly in these things is that we find that we kind of take turns, or hopefully do, in terms of finding out who's really up for a particular task. You know, if someone tries to trash us on social media and we see it, you know, one of us is more apt to have a strong reaction than the other, and it's like, okay, you take it, I'm not ready. Or if one of us does a public communication that we're about to send out, that just, it's like, okay, what you want to say is in there somewhere, but your reaction is blurring it. Let's step back a minute and see how we can say this in such a way that people can hear it more effectively. I find I'm not just twice as smart and twice as effective with Kimberly as I would be on my own. There's a synergistic quality, not to mention the bringing in the feminine energy and wisdom. I think I'm at least five times as smart and effective out of being in relationship with her. So I'm forever grateful. I frankly don't know how I could do what I do if I couldn't be having the conversations that I have with someone that I love and trust so much. So I feel much blessed, and I wish it for everyone.
Thank you. Hey, I wanted to say that the boards are lighting up with questions and comments coming in that I want to get to, but I do want to thank Thomas and Candace in particular for coming forward. I know we'll have to have you not be participants to bring others up, but my heart is with you, and I'm so grateful for your courage and clarity and commitment and for your joining us, Thomas, today. So,
well, thank you. Thank you for that. I did want to say one thing. You know, there were, and I'm sure Candace can speak about it more, but, you know, my brother really believed that we could cure major diseases like cancer and all the rest, diabetes and all those. And a lot of it has to do with managing the production of NAGLAs in your body. And you know, I think that is just a huge thing that when it comes to the battle of cancer, that's kind of like the secret. You know, you finally found the secret to why people aren't getting better and why we're getting worse. And unfortunately, its tentacles run all the way out through all that stuff. But I think that's the major reason why holistic doctors are being killed, because with the accessibility of information, though they don't have to be intimately involved with someone or work in the same building, like-minded doctors can share information very quickly and start to see the problems. You know, and I think Jeff was at that point. I believe NAGLAs was the big bad guy, and he found a way to win that battle of balance between the macrophage and NAGLAs, and I think that was one of the major reasons why he was on someone's list, and I think Gonzalez was the same way.
I agree with you, Tom. And in fact, while you brought that up, I know one of the questions that I saw in our Q&A window was one of the people on the call heard Aaron say that the GICMAF was no longer legal in the U.S. And I know this would be an issue very near and dear to her heart. So is it that it's difficult to get, or is it that it's actually illegal? Aaron, do you know that, or Tom?
I'll defer to the Bradstreets because they have been, I mean, I think I know, but I know they know for sure. So I'll let Tom answer that.
Well, to our knowledge, I mean, I've spoken to the people that you can still purchase it in other countries and have it shipped directly to your house. But we are seeing an increase in talk about a lot of the companies being raided and having issues. So I don't know how much longer that will be, but you can still purchase it.
Right. I can for myself, I can go online. I can pay, you know, the $400 or $500, whatever that is, and I can get it shipped directly to me. I just can't have a doctor give it to me. Is at least that's our understanding of it from our attorney.
I think from Japan, it also is one of them. Still, we can get it from there. So people I know doing that.
Correct.
And we've heard that it also is sometimes getting stopped at the border, but so far has usually continued through to the patient, hopefully before the actual live compound dies.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I did want to briefly say, we talked earlier about my brother's office being raided. And that's such a powerful word. You know, when you hear that word raid, it's like you picture a crack house that guys are loaded up in SWAT uniforms and they're busting through the doors because they're these champions of righteousness. Well, that really wasn't the case. You know, yes, there were a lot of agents that came in. There was no forced entry. It was all on the up and up. It was a very simple process where they came in and looked at his office, but as Aaron stated earlier, he wasn't arrested. There was no problems with anything. It was just harassment.
Well, and the search warrant was specific for GCMEF.
Right, I read that, yes.
You know, it just makes him look guilty. You know, it's one of the things that we found during this investigation. The preconceived concepts or the socialized way of thinking just sets this course for people to go down that they're just so unwilling to think differently. It's really upsetting.
Yeah, well, we're very aware of a man named Dr. Sam Chichua that many of you probably saw recently on the Bill Maher show. And we know his story quite well. And we've met many, many people who have been cured by him of things ranging from cancer to HIV to chronic fatigue and drug addiction and other things. And Kimberly, do you want to real quick recount his story? Because it's just an example of what Tom and Candace are talking about, that these things, these stories can start in seemingly kind of unassuming, you know, official ways, but the motive behind it can be very nasty.
Yeah, I mean, I want to get into hearing from other people more, too. But I'll just say, I think what you just said, Tom, is really it, where things are painted in a way that they meet people in some trained way that they're willing then to just abandon their own critical thinking.
Correct.
And down some path like, oh, yeah, this guy must be a quack or something. And in the case of Dr. Sam, I know, you know, it was his father died when Sam was young, and he was really motivated to find a cure for cancer. He had his first published medical paper when he was 19, became a doctor, an oncologist, a cardiologist,
and an immunologist.
And an immunologist in went to school in China, his degree, he got, so in Australia, Mexico, the UK, he's been licensed to practice in various countries, but not in America. Anyway, he was having great success with serums that he developed in treating cancer and HIV, and Cedars-Sinai reached out to him and offered to do some testing of his protocols that he had. And soon into it, the serums were stolen and supposedly destroyed, and they said they didn't know anything about him. And he did had a lawsuit, which for slander and for stealing his serums, which in fact he won unanimously with the jury 20 years ago. But and he won it by having a guy with HIV on the stand, who they did the blood test, showed that he had active AIDS, did did an injection of Dr. Sam's, and the next day did the blood test, and he was cured. It's an instant thing, and I've seen it. I have felt cancerous tumors disappear under my hand with Sam's injections. I've seen personally miraculous healing. But anyway, he, you know, during the appeal, there was a car bomb. He was blown up, seriously injured in every respect, injured physically badly with shrapnel in his organs and his face. And also, I think the nervous system.
He's still alive, just to clarify. He was subjected to an explosion, but his dog basically pulled him away and saved him. So he is still alive, but still being harassed.
Yeah, still being harassed in really big ways, and you can see a lot of them is to just make him look so bad that people forget. It's like, I mean, he has a really quirky personality, and all that, you know, tells offensive jokes, all kinds of things, but does he also have a remarkable cure and an entirely new way of dealing with DNA repair and a different way of seeing illness and healing and of empowering individuals. I mean, he's got stuff where through blood transfusions, cures can be passed from one to another, you know, speaking of obsoleting a pharmaceutical industry. So, in you know, it's this critical thinking that says, do I have to like every single thing about each person who's bringing forward one of these new innovations? Or do I need to keep my eye on the ball here and see what is it that they're doing? And in fact, toward that end, you know, my own personal passion and where we're going to be going. And I can bring this up because we're actually shifting focus a little bit because our experience with so many healers and innovators in every field inspired us to create what we called Thrive Connect, which we've spoken of loosely in the last few years, where we just it was such a unique position that we set out and did some initial vetting of some of these new technologies and innovations that came in the field of agriculture and healing and new energy technologies. And we identified the ones that really looked to be the most promising and that if unleashed together could really provide the kind of synergy and solutions that we see with the synergy and problems, right? And so one of the things that we recognize is that these projects need a lot more than money. They really need infrastructure. They need security. They need business management skills. They need manufacturing and distributing and just a whole infrastructure in addition that would make the money going into them a really good investment, whether it's a donation or an investment. It makes it solid because you can see how it will really come to fruition. And so our next Thrive Together event is actually going to be our final one for a while because we're going to be turning our attention. I'm going to be full on into really focusing on these strategies for fulfillment and how to design the systems that take into account all of the obstacles that we're so aware of and that we're describing today to develop really safe, comprehensive strategies to move things forward and out in a comprehensive and effective way. So our next event is going to be March 13th, and we'll talk a little bit more about what we're going to be doing to the extent that we're talking about that. when we made Thrive, we couldn't have been so in the public. We really needed to focus and do all kinds of things. And it's really like that now. We need some time to focus in and do this. And Foster's been working on a book on the side this whole time, and he's finally going to focus on working on that also. So we'll talk more about that and also what it's like in these times to keep the heartfelt connections with our loved ones while we disagree so much and see the world through such different lens. So that's going to be on March 13th. I just wanted to mention it because it's related to all of this about what are some of the things that we can do. And for me, the best use of me in these times is to apply my strategic systems thinking to how to really empower these solutions in a way that I'm confident we can get them out there safely and timely. So,
great. Well, the time that we have remaining, let's bring on some of those questions that have been coming in.
Yeah.
Okay, first we were going to bring up Heather. And again, thanks, Tom and Candace, so much.
Thank you, Tom and Candace, yes.
So, Heather, your microphone is off. Did you want to answer or ask your question?
No.
And would you like to have your camera enabled?
No.
Okay. Great. Go ahead.
Oh, all right, there. Answer my question. Can I call you back? Okay, bye.
Heather, are you with us?
I'm here. Where are you?
Go ahead. Go ahead and ask your question.
Oh, God.
Heather, we can hear you. Can you hear us?
Oh, you can hear me?
Yes.
Oh, hello, everyone.
Hi there. Welcome.
Peace and happiness. Hi. Yeah, I'm just wondering, you know, in the scheme of things, as we're moving forward with the existing dynamic of our government, and their effect that it might have on health and prosperity for us. What do you think about the single payer system and the government having that much control over our healthcare?
Good question. Let's hear from our doctor first.
Well, I'm not a big fan of government intervention in most areas of life. So, of course, some cases probably necessary, like defense. But when it comes to healthcare, you know, I feel for the people who don't have resources to afford basics healthcare like many other countries do. But unfortunately, when you provide that resource from the government, what you're doing is essentially subsidizing and promoting and supporting the conventional medical system, which we know has been carefully manipulated by over a century ago by the Rockefellers and Carnegie Foundation and these large corporations. So you're essentially supporting the pharmaceutical model, and that nutritional interventions and simple lifestyle changes are essentially excluded. They're not taught in medical schools. So these simple, radical, profoundly effective interventions are just ignored. So I'm not a big fan of the government.
Yeah, well, hopefully the holistic aspects would move into that whole thing where, I mean, everybody has whatever kind of health care that they need and that there's no one who goes without.
It's an important goal, no question. Unfortunately, the system is so twisted and warped, it just seems to me virtually impossible to achieve its current form.
I think in ISO too. I'm going to move forward because we have 10 minutes left and we have so many people.
Thank you.
Lined up.
I have to say, I agree totally with Joe. The worst thing we could do for healthcare is to put 100% of it in the care of the government, who's working for the corporations, who's working for the bankers.
Yeah, can I just also comment? It was one of the question and answers in the chat session about the Strength Finders, and that was in fact the Gallup Strength Finders 2.0 by the Gallup Foundation. So that's the correct one.
Great. Thank you.
Okay, next was Sky. Sky, can you hear us?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. I'm wondering, I'm a very good organizer and a good administrator and a good bodyguard. Is there a website where people can volunteer to do these things for other people? Like there's an organization called Bikers Against Child Abuse where bikers will go out and protect the children, teach them how to protect themselves, and therefore empower them. It seems to me like we need something like that to help protect and work with our healers and inventors and such.
Well, I think it's a great question. I'm aware of that bikers group. For me, in terms of security, I leave that to the professionals. I mean, we can all read things and take whatever precautions we know to, but when it comes to doing any investigation, bodyguarding, and that type of thing, I would either leave it to the professionals or have the professionals organizing whatever volunteer group there is. And that's simply a matter of funding. We have an extensive network of security experts who've proven their integrity and where their heart is. And They would just need the funding to go out and set up security for various, doctors and inventors and so forth, and then to also accompany them when they're going into the public in ways that might be risky. In terms of an organizer, those type of skills are always needed. And I would recommend that if you have specific things that you want to offer to the healing community, that you get in touch with Erin through her website, or check out this IHCPO, the Indigenous Practitioners Group, and if you like their website and what they're up to, you might contact them and ask them the same questions.
That sounds good. How would we be able to give funds to the security groups that you're talking about?
You could contact us at info@thrivemovement.com. We could follow up with that probably because we have such extensive security needs for so many of the people that we work with. So I think that's the best way to go there. But I do think that your acknowledgement that this is real and needs our attention matters, because I think one of the things that gives the ongoing courage and energy is not having this denied, especially for the people so immediately impacted. Like I'm thinking of Tom and Candace talking about. I mean, it's just so unsatisfying to have somebody deny the reality of something that's so dangerous and so pervasive. So I think your understanding that this is true and helping to share that awareness as you do so well, I think matters more than you might know. I want to move on because we have two more people lined up here really quickly.
Thank you, Sky. Also, while we're on this topic of digital or on security, I just wanted to sort of mention, there's a whole aspect of awareness of just digital security, which is really taking back your own privacy. Use digital, encrypted communication, use an open source encrypted communications, and the solutions are really out there. They're off the shelf. We did a whole blog about it, so I'll leave it at that.
Thanks, God.
I think next up we were going to have, is it Michaela? Are you there?
Yes, hi, I'm here. Hi.
Welcome, Michaela. What's your question?
Oh, God, I have three.
Just pick one. We're out of time.
Okay, Nagali's caught my attention lately. Could Dr. McCullough expand a little bit on Nagali's?
Well, Erin's done a lot more research on that, so I'd love her to give her comments on it.
Thank you.
I'll say I'm a journalist, not a scientist, as I always say, Michaela, but what the Bradstreets were touching upon that earlier, and I'll keep it brief, and I think there are a few articles about it on my site, but like Dr. Bradstreet was working with GCMAF and finding out that Nagalase inhibits GCMAF, which is naturally occurring in all our bodies. So when they talk about having the GCMAF shipped to your door, that would be either from a blood source from human or bovine, cow. And what Dr. Bradstreet found was using that with these autism patients who had high levels of Nagalase, you can do a blood test to test it. And some feel that's from the vaccines, that he was able to use the GCMAF to bring those Nagalase levels down. So that's just kind of putting it in a nutshell there for you and in a very brief.
We know several people who are investigating this now to find out whether or not there have actually been Nagalase covertly put into vaccines to lower our immune system. And so far, the results that I'm hearing about are kind of chilling, but it's premature to reveal those yet.
All right. Well, thank you. That was kind of the direction of my thinking. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Can we slip Johan in here really
quick? Sure.
All right.
You bet. Johan, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Hey, my question is actually to Foster. I'm actually from India, and I'm seeing how Bill Gates has been there's been a lawsuit against Bill Gates about his vaccine crimes. And at the same time, I see a lot of GM turmeric kind of sweep into the system and trying to come here, which has actually met with a lot of resistance. So where do you see this going in India, and how do you see the agenda playing out here?
where do I see the relationship of Bill Gates to all of this?
Where do you see the agenda of like poisoning our health and the vaccines and the GMOs going in India?
Well, it was the most challenging topic that we put into the Thrive movie. And Kimberly and I had to really keep in discussion with our own team about putting it in, and that was the depopulation agenda. It's such a horrible one to confront. Most people don't want to, and they don't want to so much that they don't spend enough time getting sufficiently informed. Unfortunately, if you do get sufficiently informed, it's, in my opinion, just undeniable and a critical part. I mean, I was a martial arts instructor for many years, and I would teach my students the number one priority in martial arts is getting an accurate assessment of your reality. So that informed a lot of my research for Thrive and other things. You know, we need to face what's really going on. And when you look to see what's being going on, what's being created as like a gauntlet for us to try to move through on a daily basis with GMOs and with vaccines and with aspartame and MSG and then chemtrails and pesticides and back, you know, the agendas that have come out where the CDC has been busted over 30 times intentionally putting sterilants into vaccines in third world populations, particularly with dark skin. I mean, there's no denying that there's an agenda there to depopulate. And so the people like, you know, the Bradstreets and Gonzalez's and Hidendahls and so forth of the world and Mercolas and Elizabeths and so forth are actually bringing out the awareness that will help have a thriving population. Now, in my research, fortunately, I found that also the healthier and more prosperous and more educated a society is, the more naturally their population growth goes to zero. So I'm not concerned about the population growth by having healthy people. And I think, unfortunately, people like Bill Gates and a lot of other, you know, very wealthy people who are, I think, part of this agenda, think that they need to covertly and artificially committing genocide in order to keep the population down. So I think it's, you know, ignorant is the nice word, and, you know, nasty and sociopathic, I think, is a more accurate description. So where do I think it's going? I don't think it will succeed. I think that the very structure that they work for is being exposed by brave people like the ones we've been talking about today and by the internet itself. You know, people are catching on. It's getting exposed. That whole structure, as powerful as it is significantly crumbling. And I think that my hope and what I'm spending my entire life on is working for the creation of decentralized, thriving alternatives. So instead of replacing, you know, multiple authoritarian regimes with a one world or the completely dominant national authoritarian regime, the answer to me is unleashing the creativity of, you know, the Mercolas and Bradstreets of the world, and the Dr. Sams in health, and then the free energy inventors, and then the media people, and the, you know, the Austrian economists who are actually, you know, have proven the value and helpfulness of the true free market. In every sector where Kimberly and I have been exploring, where we see these dire issues and patterns of assassinations, we also see real cures for restoring the wholeness of natural systems everywhere we look. So it's really a matter of getting educated enough and then collaborating well enough amongst those who are awake to it to allow a condition of freedom and creativity where all of this stuff can come out, and we're not buying into and supporting these authoritarian regimes anymore that don't have the individual's best interests in mind. So thanks for triggering my rant, and we'll probably need to close with that because we've committed to our discussion. So I really want to thank Aaron and Joe for coming on and making this a really rich conversation. I've loved it, and thank you, Kimberly, and Goa, and Rob and Mitch, who have been working diligently behind the scenes to make all this run smoothly. Thank you so much. Any final words, Aaron or Joseph or Kimberly, before we go?
I'd like to just quickly say just what an honor it was. When I think I first got the email from you, and I, like I told you, Joe and I watched your film, and yes, I got the timeline off a little bit, but it was just such an inspiration. So I feel like I just want to thank you, because it has been tough writing about this day after day about people we know. So thank you for bringing positivity to this. And the minute that you wrote, I knew that finally the light was being brought to something, you know, out of the darkness. So just thank you. That's all I thought.
You are welcome.
And I just also want to equally express my gratitude to you and what you're doing in your work with Thrive. It's just a magnificent tool to help educate people and bring awareness and consciousness to this really important area. So thank you so much, and I really appreciate the opportunity to connect.
Yeah, you are absolutely welcome. And to each of you and to the Bradstreets, and I think there's some other members of other families that have been affected listening, let us know how we can help with the awareness and network that we have. As you're going along, if you run up against obstacles, if you think we can help with any of them, please get in touch with us. Kimberly?
Thank you. And I want to say thank you to everyone who took their time this Saturday to join us, and to remind you that the next event on March 13th will be our final Thrive Together gathering for now. So we'll really look forward to seeing you then and sharing what's next.
So Aaron and Joe's websites are in the posted in chat. And there's lots of valuable resources that people have been putting in there. So let's open up for just a final moment so that everybody can say goodbye and thank you to Elizabeth and Joe. This could be a little chaotic, but we'll close with this.
Thank you.
That gives you a taste of all the people that would like to thank you. Running a smooth ship here. Have a great Valentine's weekend. Love to everyone.
Bye for now.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Happy
Bye-bye.
Valentine's Day. Bye. Thank you.